Welcome to the Hockey PDOcast. My name is Dmitry Filipovich, and joining me is my buddy Peter Bao. Peter, what's going on, man?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I imagine I'm a bit more well-rested than you are, although not nearly as well-rested as I would like to be, but that's okay because we're recording this the morning after the Stanley Cup was awarded and the Colorado Avalanche won it. And so I figured, you know, I typically like to give myself a bit more time to kind of digest this stuff and maybe even rewatch it and think about it a bit more, but it's still, you know, it's hot, it's fresh on the mind. I think people want to listen, and it's fitting that we do this now to kind of put a bow on the Stanley Cup playoffs before we move on to offseason content and whatnot. So, where do you want to start this conversation? Cause obviously we're going to kind of focus from the Avs perspective as the victors here and you cover the team. You know, now that you had whatever, how many hours have passed since all of last night's festivities, what's kind of most fresh on your mind, or what's the thing you kind of keep thinking about the most in kind of the afterlife of it all?
Yeah. Well, one is obviously the emotions you see on the ice after. You see Nathan MacKinnon crying while he's hugging his dad. You see Darren Helm crying while he's holding his daughter. You see all the members of remaining members of the 2016-17 team standing together for a picture, going from the worst team in the league to this. From a hockey perspective, I think just that third period, we were talking about it a little bit before we started recording, but it was maybe the best period of hockey I've seen the Avalanche play all year. And it, given the stakes, given everything that was on the line, and even though they didn't score, it was just a clinical, I mean, they allowed nothing that entire period. And I was so impressed with that. I thought that was a really, really gutsy effort that third period.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. I was thinking about that as well, because after the game, I was watching the Sportsnet feed, and Elliot Friedman and David Amber were interviewing Darcy Kemper, like right after the game when everyone's celebrating and whatnot, and they kind of pulled him aside. And they essentially asked him what he was thinking, you know, when they went down 1-0 early on in game six, just knowing how well Vasilevskiy was playing at the other end and how, you know, it likely meant from his perspective, like he didn't really have any wiggle room anymore to make any mistakes. Cause if you go down 2-0 or 3-0, like you're probably not scoring enough goals to come back against the Lightning in that scenario. Right. And, you know, aside from being like such a classic hockey guy move on his part to just deflect attention from himself and kind of be programmed to make everything about the team, he like his answer was pretty much entirely about like how the guys in front of him made life so much easier for him by just like limiting what he actually had to do. And especially in that third period, you or I may as well have been out there, because aside from that one shot, I believe Kucherov got on kind of like a one timer with, it was a great scoring chance. It was like the kind of classic, like, you know, going north, east, west, made a move, one timer quickly from Kucherov where he snaps it. And that was a real scoring chance. But aside from that, like you or I may have as well have been in net for the first, 11, 12 minutes of that period, because the only shot the Lightning got on net was a dump in by Ryan McDonough from center ice, essentially. And so he's right in that regard, where like, it really was about as clinical a defensive effort as you're going to see, especially given the stakes. And for me, that was the takeaway, because for all the offensive firepower this Colorado Avalanche team has, just that attention to detail, and when they're buzzing like that, how they're able to almost like suffocate you in a way defensively, where it felt like the Lightning weren't able to complete two passes back to back, right? Like they weren't able to exit their zone. It felt like they were jumping every passing lane. They were on all those breakouts. They weren't giving them any traction. And then I just love to see that, because so many times in that instance, and I think the Avs themselves have fallen into this in the past, it's kind of human nature to shell up a bit and be like, all right, we're just going to not mess up here. So we're going to sit back. We're going to try to absorb their best punch. We're going to block as many shots as we can. And we're going to hope that our defensive shell is strong enough to, you know, hold on to this one goal lead. And instead they kind of went the opposite way and attacked instead, and just didn't ever let Tampa even throw that punch. And that was just so impressive to me.
Yeah, and that's the way they needed to play. I mean, because like you said, they've referenced a few times game five against St. Louis. I don't know if you remember that off the top of your head, but that was the game that they had a 3-0 lead and blew it. And they referenced learning from that and just how they got away from their game because they didn't want to mess up. All those things that you said. And last night was an example of them sticking to their game, having long offensive zone shifts where they were just keeping it in the offensive zone. So it wasn't that they were, I mean, they were playing well in the defensive zone, but the big thing was that they just weren't really letting it get into the defensive zone for that long. And I thought Bowen Byram after the game, I talked to him and he said, we went out there and we probably played one of the most perfect clinching third periods in the history of hockey. So he was a little excited and rightfully so. And that's maybe a bit of a hyperbole, but also like, I mean, it was a darn good third period against the two-time defending cup champions. So maybe he's got a point there that it was one of the best ever.
Yeah, well, it's funny enough because I thought that game two they played earlier in the series was about as comprehensive a performance as I've seen on that stage as well. Obviously, in a much, you know, the stakes are high because it's still a game in the Stanley Cup Finals, but it's game two, it's early in the series, they're at home, there's not as much pressure. You go up a few goals and all of a sudden it's a lot easier to kind of keep your, you know, foot on the pedal and finish that off, as opposed to this where you're on the road, you've already blown game five at home, you still like your chances in a game seven going back in front of your home crowd, but you don't really want to let it get to that point either. And so it's an entirely different sort of psychological exercise, I guess. And so for them to pull it off in that fashion was impressive to me. And you know, for me, like, I really honestly have no rooting interest. I just cheer for fun hockey and good stories. But this is a sport where often you can kind of wonder whether it's a feature or a bug that the playoffs can be so random sometimes, and like how much of it is a meritocracy, because it feels like being the better team doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win. And in this case, for me, it's just so immensely satisfying that it really does feel like the best team in the league this season wound up being the last one standing. And as a fan, that's kind of all you can ask for.
And the second best team probably was the second last team standing, you know? And I'll also add with the game two versus game six, the biggest difference to me was that I thought in game two, the Lightning just didn't have it that day. Like, they played poorly. I think last night was about what the Avs did more than what Tampa didn't do, if that makes sense. Like, I thought that Tampa was playing okay and they were playing desperate hockey and they were trying to get anything going and throwing stuff at the wall, and the Avs just weren't letting them have it.
Yeah, I think against a lesser opponent, the Lightning, I mean, would have had more opportunities, obviously. It did feel like, you know, maybe it is unfair maybe to the Avs because they obviously kind of created their own luck in that regard. It did feel like the Lightning just kind of ran out of gas. I mean, I felt like that way in round one against Toronto at times when I was watching them. Like, and they kind of made a habit of sort of playing possum in that regard, where they look like they were kind of just down and out, and then all of a sudden they like do the Undertaker gif of just popping back up. And you know, to their credit, like, I, after game two, I did a podcast with Shayna Goldman, and I think listening back to it, the general tenor was like, it felt like that might as well have been the show that we ran after the Stanley Cup final was over. Like, it felt like it was done. Like, after that game two, it just felt like I didn't see a roadmap for the Lightning, acknowledging that they had bounced back in previous rounds in similar fashion. Watching that game two, I was like, I don't understand how they can skate with this Avalanche team. And to their credit, the end of that series was very tight. I believe in the final three games, every single second of game time was played within a one goal scoreline either way. Like, wow. No one had a two goal lead at any point in
the
games. And, you know, two games went to overtime, but whatever, yeah, 4-1 goal games. Like, it was about as tight as you can play it. And so as a spectator, that's really fun because, yeah, you want this stage to be played in that type of fashion. And the Lightning really gave the Avalanche everything they had. And so, you know, credit to them, but the Avalanche were, it did feel like throughout that series, the superior team.
Yeah. And I thought for me, it was what it came down to was the goaltending. Cause the Avalanche, if the Avalanche could get enough from Darcy Kemper, like you said, they had the better skaters, but Andre Vasilevsky is such a trump card in so many ways. If they could get enough from Darcy Kemper, they were going to be okay. Especially after they had that two goal lead. And to Darcy Kemper's credit, he's taken a lot of heat at points because he has let in some bad goals. But I thought last night he was excellent. The first goal he allowed was not a good goal, but he shut it down after that. And he was very, very good. And I thought the same thing for game four, the overtime win with the Kadri goal in overtime. I thought he was excellent in that game. So I think Kemper deserves a ton of credit. And even if he wasn't good these playoffs necessarily, like, some of his advanced metrics were not great, I think he clearly had a very good last two wins for the Avs, and they needed that.
Yes. Okay, this is a totally off topic question. I don't know if you wrote this story this season. What on earth was going on with Darcy Kemper's equipment all season?
I have no clue. He had to switch brands of skate blades at one point because he had, I think it was in November, there were like three times in two games that his skate blade just fell out of his skate. And like that led to like, they had to switch goalies one game. They just were like, it just kept happening. And they were like, all right, Darcy, you're getting the night off. We're going to Pavel Francouz this game. He had that. He obviously had a stick got caught through his mask. Like, I don't really have an answer to you as to what was going on. I know he had to switch skate blades at one point. He also at one point like stepped on his skate lace and had to get a lace repaired. And the like, he had some weird stuff that happened this season. But hey, he had an amazing regular season and he was off to a good start in the postseason before the stick got in his his mask and struggled. But he had good games when he needed to at the end of the cup.
Yeah, it's the classic example. It's like, all right, my one wish is to play behind a really awesome team at the Colorado Avalanche. It's like, all right.
Especially after being in Arizona.
Yeah, we can grant you that wish. Unfortunately, you didn't say anything about all your equipment malfunctioning and every other thing going possibly wrong. Yeah. But it all worked out.
Getting caught in your mask. And
Yeah, and funny enough, in the biggest moment of the season, it was actually Vasilevsky's equipment that let him down a little bit with his helmet coming undone. So, all right, well, let's kind of get into the specific like skater performances then here that I wanted to highlight a little bit. And you mentioned Bo and Byram earlier. Now, this is going to sound sacrilegious off the top initially, considering the names involved in this series. You've got Victor Hedman, you've got Cale Makar, you've got Devon Taves. I mean, it's a Ryan McDonough, Eric Chernak, you know, it's a star-studded group of defensemen. I thought for my money, Bowen Byram was the best defenseman of all of them in these six games from start to finish. He didn't have necessarily the high highs of the wow plays that Makar made every once in a while. But for the most part, just in terms of the consistency, it really felt like just watching him play, it was about as thorough a performance as you're going to see. And considering the season he had, the ups and downs that he faced, for him to end the season on that note was just such a remarkable story to watch. And listen, like, he credit to Jared Bednar as well. I mean, I guess Bo and Byram made it easy for him because he was playing so well. But when you look back, like I tweeted this, Bo and Byram played more 5-on-5 minutes in this series than any defenseman. And now Cale Makar, you know, kills more penalties, plays obviously in the top unit power play. So they kind of balanced that out in that perspective. But he was leaned on and they were playing him with Taves, with Makar, you know, with Eric Johnson. They were playing with all different combinations depending on the situation. And with him out there, the Avalanche outshot the Lightning 79-44 at 5-on-5 in the series. And he saved his best performance for last with what I thought was like a true star making performance in the clincher, where he was arguably the best player on the ice from start to finish. And so, yeah, I guess we got to talk about a bit about Bo and Byram. I talked about him a lot in this podcast throughout this postseason. I thought his emergence, especially after the Sam Girard injury, was a game changer and they really needed it. And he stepped up and did everything you could possibly ask for.
Yeah, that guy is he's a big game player. I would say Makar still for me was the best defenseman in that.
Well, he had the most to do, right? And the most pressure on him, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he played a lot of minutes, but I do think that this was, I mean, just an absolute unbelievable showing for Bo and Byram. I thought last night in the third period, I was like, this is a big game player. Like, you look at him and it was funny. His preseason, he was pretty meh. He didn't really do much. He was at rookie camp. He was fine in the rookie tournament. Didn't wow you. First game of the season, the lights are bright. And he is on from the jump. Scores one of the first Avs goals of the season and looks electric from the beginning. And probably would have been in the Calder Trophy mix if he hadn't gotten hurt. Took him a while to work back. Samuel Girard goes down in the Blues series. And immediately, Byram was playing well before that, but he raised his game. And then in the Cup, like you said, just an excellent, excellent showing. And credit to Jared Bednar because he played him a lot. Like, he stuck with him a lot. And I thought that that speaks a lot to Bednar's trust and willingness to trust a young player who's, I mean, that's the youngest guy on the team. He's 21 years old. And it speaks a lot to Byram's ability to step up, because I saw those numbers that you put out there. It was remarkable. He had a, it's funny because last night I kind of felt was all about, like, for me, capturing the emotion. So I haven't even like dived into like all the like hockey specific stuff. So to see those numbers when I did, I was like, they didn't shock me because you could tell how well he was playing, but I was like, dang, like, he really, like, he was a, I mean, it was a star level performance.
Well, let me give you some more numbers on him then. So he played 24-52 at 5-on-5, which was like 2.5 minutes more than anyone on the team. 6 shot attempts, including one where he rang it off the iron and very easily could have scored. Set up 5 5-on-5 shots for his teammates. And that doesn't include the beautiful assist on the one timer for McKinnon's goal that got the Avs on the board. And yeah, it was pretty much everything you could ask for from him. I imagine the moment he's eligible for his extension coming off his ELC, that's going to be very high on the to-do list for the Avalanche, because, you know, knock on wood, health permitting, like, it feels like it's only a matter of time before his offensive numbers do actually match up with the way he's been playing, right? Like, he didn't score this postseason. He has 0 goals. And it felt like he was within
so close.
A centimeter to like 5 or 6 potentially, right? And if you replay it 100 times, it feels like a bunch of those scenarios do come true and he scores a ton of goals. And it feels like heading into next season, like, my expectations for him offensively are going to be through the roof. And so I still feel like you could probably, just because of the way the salary caps, like the contract structures work and stuff, and how RFAs have so little leverage, like, the light Avalanche will be able to like leverage this into a reasonable cap figure where, assuming he's healthy and playing at this capacity, it's going to be like, he's going to provide great value for them moving forward. And so that's why I think like they're going to be all over this, and rightfully so, because he showed throughout this entire postseason, but especially in the Stanley Cup final, that like it used to be Makar and Taves, and now it's Makar, Taves and Byram, I think.
Yeah. And that's not even to mention Gerard, who's right, a darn good player himself. Like, it's, they've got a wealth of defensemen that are going to be a problem for opponents. And we'll see what they, because they are going to have some decisions to do with their defensemen, with like Manson's a free agent. Eric Johnson only has 1 year left on his deal. Jack Johnson, I know, is kind of a guy that maybe isn't a fan or an analytics darling.
No, he's a vibes guy.
He's a vibes guy. And I'll tell you what, like, my bar for Jack Johnson, and this is going to sound mean, and I really don't mean it in a mean way, but my bar for Jack Johnson is, did I notice him in a game? And if the answer is no, that means he played just fine. You know, like, he didn't mess up. And the entire Stanley Cup, he put together games where I know his like expected goals weren't great, and I'm sure there are like reasons for that. And he's obviously not to the level of some of his teammates, but I thought he was pretty sturdy. So credit to him for coming through like that.
But once again, like, I'm going to keep going back to this. Let's give Jared Bednar a bit of credit here, because totally, in some of these games where he felt like he couldn't afford to have Jack Johnson out there, he wasn't forcing it just for the sake of rolling 3 defense pairs. No. Like, he was creatively mixing and matching. Like I said, he'd get Byram out there with Taves, then he'd get Byram out there with Makar, he'd have Makar and Taves. Like, he'd mix and match like his top 4 or 5 guys. And there were certain, like, there was one game where I like looked and it was like the third period and Jack Johnson had played 5 minutes or something for the game. And it wasn't because he had missed any time going to the room or was injured. It was just because Jared Bednar was like, I am going to go down with my best guys here, and I'm going to play, especially on the road where I don't have last change and I can't control the environment that I'm going to have him out there for. I'm going to just, I can't risk it. And that's a sign of a great coach that understands his team and his personnel and the gravity of the situation, and isn't just like robotically going through the motions and just rolling his like all lines and all partners as if it's the preseason. Right. And so Jared Bednar is not going to get a ton of credit in the grand scheme of things here, because the Avalanche have so many star players and they have so many, you know, different areas we can focus on of like, oh, this guy did this guy did that. And the coach often gets lost in the shuffle, similar to what John Cooper has gone through over the past couple of years. But I thought he did a really great job in this series. I mean, like, how many different top line combinations did they throw at the Lightning in this series? It felt like McKinnon played with pretty much every single forward they have on the team.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up too, of his, it was always Landeskog, MacKinnon, Rantanen before this postseason. Like, that was there. And they still – they would roll that line when they really needed a goal or when they really wanted to get some offense going. But this postseason and late in the regular season – and actually, Gabriel Landeskog's injury allowed him to do this a little bit. But late in the season, the Avs, what they did was they tried to tinker with their top six just because they knew they were going to – last year in Vegas, they felt like when they had to shuffle things, they just kind of panicked almost. Not panicked, but like it took a while to get going. You know, when things – I mean, you remember they lost two games in a row and then they couldn't really regain their footing. Yep. So this year they tried out all these different things and they had Nichushkin with the top line. He was excellent. They had Lehkonen with the top line and he scores the game-winning goal last night. You had – It was an impressive job of pushing the right buttons. And I thought that Landeskog deserves a lot of credit for that. And Nichushkin, because those are the two guys who have felt like you could put them in any spot and it would work because yeah. They're just such like, they're great puck retrievers. They're great defensively, all that.
Yeah. I mean, I'd add Lehkonen as well. Like what in the last game, he was up there on the top line with MacKinnon and he was, I mean, he scored the winning goal, but he was making a lot of remarkable stuff happen with his passing as well. I think, you know, I've given this a lot of thought in terms of like Joe Sakic gets a ton of praise and deservedly so for, you know, winning all of the trades he makes and the job he's done putting this team together. I think credit certainly goes to the fact that the Avalanche, I think, are one of the preeminent organizations in terms of their embracing and usage of analytics and how they functionally, you know, leverage that into identifying certain players. And I'm sure my pal Eric Parnas, once he's done celebrating, is going to be listening to this. And I'm super happy for him and he deserves all the success in the world. And he's been on this podcast a ton in its early years, but you know, you've got that. But I do think Bednar also deserves some credit because you see all these players that come in and pretty much find immediate success on this team. And it's easy, you know, to say, okay, well, they have a ton of great players already. So there's an environment and infrastructure in place where, yeah, if you're a Turi Lehkonen and you go from playing with like random players on the Canadiens to all of a sudden playing with Nathan MacKinnon or whatever, like you're going to look pretty good. But Bednar really does, I think, a good job of enabling and empowering a lot of these players. Like, man, it'd be a really fun chat to have with Josh Manson, for example, to just compare like how he felt playing in this environment to the past couple of years in Anaheim, because I've never seen that guy like pinch as much as he did in these games and have these like scenarios where he's like leading a 2-on-1 or 3-on-2 rush or whatever. Like he wasn't, I think he did it a couple times in game 6 here.
He was on the rush with, it was a 3-on-2 with Cam Lehkonen and MacKinnon. Yep. Who would have thought at the beginning of the season that in the Stanley Cup, the Avalanche would have a 3-on-2 rush led by Manson and Lehkonen.
Yeah. And
pretty funny.
And a coaching goes into a lot of that because there's certain coaches that would be like, listen, like you're our physical stay at home defenseman. I don't want you doing that. Like there was
and
a play
pro scouting also.
Yes. No, certainly. But there was a play earlier in the game. You mentioned that one on the goal, obviously. I think earlier in the game, he had one where he was on like kind of like a delayed 3-on-2 rush or whatever. And he did like a give and go and actually crashed the net. And then he wound up like falling into the backboards and it took him out of the play a little bit. But a lot of coaches would have been like, oh my God, like this guy's so out of position and would have been freaking out. And like Josh Manson is a veteran player. So I think he gets a bit of a longer leash regardless. But Bednar basically allows all of these players to basically just play in this free flowing environment where you might be our number 4 defenseman. But you can basically play like Nathan MacKinnon if the opportunity presents itself. And that must be pretty cool for any player to come into.
And especially a guy, I mean, and that's like, obviously Cale Makar would have been great wherever he went, right? Like wherever he was drafted, he had all the tools and all that. But you do have to think of like, how much has he benefited from being in a place that has encouraged him to do what he is able to. Same with Bowen Byron. And Devon Taves is a perfect example. He went from being a very good defenseman with great underlying numbers in New York to being a, maybe not a star, but a guy who's finished top 10 in Norris or top 11 in Norris voting the past 2 years.
Yeah. Maybe not a star, a superstar.
Exactly.
On this podcast, Devon Taves is a superstar.
I was actually having a debate with someone on if Devon Taves is a star. And I think what the resolution we came to, because I was initially like, yeah, he's one of the best defensemen in the league. And the resolution we came to was maybe in stature, he is not a star. Like Nazem Kadri is probably more famous than him, for example.
Yes.
But Devon Taves is an elite level player and a star level player, even if maybe he doesn't carry that aura.
Yeah, he's like one of those like really nice high-end bottles of wine that a true connoisseur would really appreciate. But maybe if you're just like a novice wine drinker, you'd be like, all right, whatever. Like, I can't differentiate between these two. Like in the sense that, yeah, you're right. I think like a casual fan at home that especially isn't an Avalanche fan, I'm sure they've heard of Devon Taves, especially now after they won the cup, but probably wouldn't be able to pick him out of a line. I mean, hasn't heard a sound bite with him. Like, what does Devon Taves' voice even sound like? But
yeah.
But man, is he a damn good hockey player. So I'm right there with you on that. Okay, well, one final guy I wanted to talk about was Val Nichushkin. Because I mentioned how I thought Bowen Byram was the best defenseman in the series. I thought Val Nichushkin was the best skater in this entire series. And yeah. I mean, yes, like certainly lower list of responsibilities than some of his other bigger name teammates. And, you know, I thought it's funny enough in game six, you know, there was that report of like, oh, is he going to play or not? He was kind of hobbling on his way into the rink. I thought there were times where he kind of looked like he was a bit slow in terms of what I've become accustomed to seeing, like with his puck pursuit. But then as that game went along, especially in that third period, he once again showed his value where he was such an instrumental part of that forecheck where he single-handedly caused like three or four either direct turnovers or harassed the defenseman into making a poor play with the puck where they basically just had to shoot it into the neutral zone. And it was from start to finish, just a remarkably dominant physical performance from him where he didn't have the wild plays that MacKinnon or Makar had, but man, that puck hounding mentality is what made this Avalanche team so special. And no one embodied that more than Val Nichushkin, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, that is Jared Bednar's type of player right there. He loves a guy like Val Nichushkin who can forecheck and work hard and do all the things that he does so well. And that's why they were so excited to get Arturi Lehkonen. They told Sakic said that what the front office told him when they got Lehkonen is we got you a mini Val. And I think that's an apt comparison. And yeah, Nichushkin was unreal these playoffs. It felt like he was making himself like $100,000 on his next contract with every shift. He was phenomenal and deserves a ton of credit.
Well, listen, there's no question that he's played himself into an entirely different tax bracket this postseason. Like, I think we all agree on that. The more interesting question for me is whether he's played himself into being viewed internally as a core member of this Avalanche team and whether the Avalanche organization views him as such, because if they do, especially in the short term, like they'll be able to move stuff around and make the money work to keep him, regardless of how much interest he gets on the open market and like what insane amount of money some other team is willing to throw at him. And from his perspective, I'm sure he'll have to take a bit less to stay on this Avalanche team, but considering the success he had and the fit is just so ideal between player and team that I doubt he'd have it better anywhere else. So we'll see how that goes. But what do you think about that question of whether he earned himself more money and earned himself more interest around the league, but might have also in a way earned himself more interest internally, because I'm sure the Avalanche valued him a ton as a player before this, but just seeing the value he was able to provide to them, it has to at least make you think about like whether we need to kind of do everything possible in our power to try and keep this guy.
Yeah. Well, I think his age makes him someone that you can potentially view as one of your core pieces. Cause you have like, for example, a guy like Nazem Kadri is 32, I think. So you're going to be a little more hesitant to give him high AAV over a long-term deal. Whereas Nichushkin, I think, is 27. Mm-hmm. I think 2013 was his draft year. So you're maybe going to be a little more willing to give him a good amount of money on a longer term deal because he's on the right side of 30, if they think his game can continue to translate well. I mean, I think he's a vital, vital piece of this Avalanche team. I thought he was incredible all season. And I think that he was incredible in a way that is sustainable, which I think is what the Avalanche probably would need to look at, is how much can he sustain this production and how much are we willing to pay for that production if he can't sustain it. So it's going to be fascinating. But I think the fact that he is a guy who can play on your top line with MacKinnon and Landeskog, play with skilled guys. He can also forecheck like hell. He can play on your penalty kill, and he can be a power play contributor. I mean, he's an excellent player. He had an excellent season.
Yeah, yeah. I'm fascinated to see. I guess the reason why I thought it was so interesting is because this Avalanche organization has been so diligent about the types of financial commitments they're willing to make, because they acknowledge, like, we have a lot of upcoming expenditures with Makar's deal and then with McKinnon's, and they already extended Landeskog, Rantanen. Like, there's going to be a lot to account for here, right? And that's why in the past they've probably missed out on, you know, they notoriously offered Artemi Panarin only a 3-year deal or whatever, because they're like, listen, like, we don't want to commit $11+ million 5 years from now, because we are probably going to need that money elsewhere. And so with Nichushkin, like, 1, 2, 3 years potentially makes sense. But then when you go further down the line, especially at whatever cap figure that is, it becomes a bit dicier. So I'm really curious. I mean, there's going to be a lot of obviously questions for this team. It's still going to be a great team. They're going to lose a couple of these players, but the core is going to be in place. And so there's a lot to build around. And as we've seen, they've been so good at identifying players they can plug and play to fit around those guys that I think there's no reason to believe they can't be this good again next year. So I'm excited about it. Peter, I think that's about it. Was there anything else from this cup final that you figured we needed to touch on here as we put a bow on it?
I think that should be good. I appreciate you having me on. And if
you need to get some sleep, man, you're, you've been putting in work here.
Yeah, I have, other than a few hours on the airplane this morning, I have not slept since before the game. So I'm probably going to go straight to bed after this.
Oh, I love it. Hopefully you get some rest and enjoy a bit of downtime. Hopefully the listeners enjoy this conversation and satisfies them a little bit as they as we put a bow on the season. So, Peter, this is a blast. We're definitely going to have you back on sometime down the road. I'm glad we're finally able to get you on the show. And we'll chat soon. So until then, take care, man.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Cheers, pal. All right, that is going to be it for today's episode of the Hockey PDOcast, and that's going to be it for the 2022 NHL postseason. So hopefully you enjoyed the games. You enjoyed the past 6-7 weeks or whatever of content and coverage on this feed. And we're gonna switch gears here, and you know, in a couple days we're gonna start moving on to off-season content. We're gonna definitely do a mock draft, as always, with our pals, Cam Robinson and Chris Peters. I believe this is going to be the third year in a row we're doing so. So that's always a blast. We're going to do some free agency preview content, or maybe some like trades we'd like to see, just to kind of get you thinking about, you know, who's going to be available and what certain teams could do, and go from there. So there's going to be plenty of fun stuff to talk about. But before we get there, I did want to do this kind of one final show to put a bow on the cup final, the Avalanche victory, kind of what we saw, just because we hadn't done a show since game two. So hopefully that satisfied that, and now we can move on and start thinking about the upcoming chaos that's going to ensue. So if you did enjoy the show and you've been liking the content here, you can certainly, as always, help us out by leaving a quick rating and review for the show wherever you typically listen to it. So definitely smash that 5-star button if you're feeling generous and you've got a bit of free time. Reviews themselves are also greatly appreciated if you want to kind of go above and beyond. A bunch of you have done so already, and it's always cool to see people just write out quick notes about either what you enjoy about the show, or, you know, giving people a heads up if they come across it, kind of why they should check it out or why you've been enjoying it. So thanks for doing that if you have already. If you haven't, please consider doing so now that we're going to have more free time here with no hockey to watch. So the shows are going to keep coming on this feed, though. So looking forward to that. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for checking the show out and for listening to all the stuff we did during the 2022 season. It was a blast. It was the best one we've had here on the PDOcast so far, and I'm looking forward to what's ahead. So thanks as always. Enjoy your summer. Enjoy your off season. We're going to be back here in a couple days with some more content. Until then.
The Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Follow on Twitter at Dim Filipovich and on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/hockeypdocast.